Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We got a lot going on in the program today. It's opening night for the Nashville Predators. Predators head coach Andrew Brunette will be with us later this hour at 7:30. So looking forward to that conversation. The Rob Rant coming up at 7:45. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for his weekly visit coming up at 8 o'clock. So we will get into the Titans and all things NFL with him. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So the Titans and the Raiders coming up this weekend. And on the surface, around the NFL, it's like, oh, great. The Titans and the Raiders
terrible
playing
game.
Each other. It's a terrible game. It is, from a Titans perspective, one of the games on the schedule, and there aren't very many, that you look at and you say, okay, well, you might have a shot to win that game. The Raiders are bad, and the Colts just absolutely spanked them.
Raiders have been playing terrible.
They are very bad. So it is kind of amazing that they beat the Patriots to begin the year. But having said that,
week one's always crazy.
Week one is nuts. They are very bad. You know, Brock Bowers is dealing with the knee injury. He did not participate in practice yesterday. So, right now, it doesn't look like he's going to play this weekend. We'll wait and see what happens on that front. Pete Carroll kind of left the window open for that earlier in the week. But it kind of takes me back to the draft conversation here. And I think it's going to be interesting to monitor this moving forward. Because I think back to 2024. And heading into it, we all knew the Titans needed help on the offensive line. They ended up drafting J.C. Latham, who, by the way, hopefully he plays and plays well this week. And, you know, me and several others were like, you know, that Brock Bowers is pretty good, man. I know he's a tight end, and I know they need help on the offensive line, but, man, they need help a lot of places. I'd be awfully tempted to take Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers ends up having just a fabulous rookie season. And I know he's hurt right now, but – there's a huge difference when he's in the game and when he's not in the game for the Raiders.
I heard Pete Carroll on SiriusXM actually yesterday afternoon doing his interview weekly there, and he talked about them missing Bowers and what he does for the middle of the field them, and how he, you know, without Bowers, he even said without Brock in there, they've been struggling.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, what he does for them in the middle of the field, I think, has been a big difference.
Well, think about this as a rookie, okay? So, as a rookie, last year, he had 112 catches for 1,194 yards and 5 touchdowns as a tight end as a rookie. Like, that is crazy.
It's pretty good.
They targeted him 153 times last year. So, I say all that to say, you know, people have heard our conversation on this show about J.C. Latham before, right? And you took a guy 7th overall at the time to be your franchise left tackle. They've already made the decision to move him to right. We've talked about that. There's no use in rehashing it now. But I've said over and over again that J.C. Latham, being a good right tackle, to me, is not good enough. He needs to be an elite right tackle in this league. Number one, because he was drafted 7th overall, and you don't draft tackle 7th overall to be, like, decent players. Like, he needs to be a great player at right tackle. But number two, as time goes on here, I think a lot of Titans fans already asked the question when it happened, but are certainly going to continue to ask the question of, you know, Brock Bowers went a few picks after that, and you could have had that if you were the Tennessee Titans. So what sort of a career, like, look, as long as Bowers stays healthy, right, and I understand that it's a violent game and your fate, your NFL career can change at any moment out there. So assuming health, like, Brock Bowers is going to be one of the elite players in this league for a long time. Again, I just read you the numbers. 112 catches for 1,194 yards, 5 touchdowns last year as a rookie. And he plays for the Raiders, right? Plays for the Raiders.
Yep.
Okay? So I think we know if he stays healthy, he's going to be probably the best tight end in football for a long time. So how good does J.C. Latham have to be for you as a Titans fan to look at it that and say, you know what? We could have had Brock Bowers, but J.C. Latham is really, really, really good, so I'll take it. I understand, you know, we're talking about a skill player and an offensive lineman. So people in this conversation are always going to lean skill player, and I get that because I do too. But it does, like, I think there's a lot of things that we pay attention to in terms of draft comps and, like, where guys go, how close they are, and especially, like, those first few picks either right before you or right after you, I think you pay attention to. Like, I think Titans fans are going to be monitoring Latham and what he does and then looking around and being like, whoop, Brock Bowers is out there. I think this really increases the pressure on J.C. Latham.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I mean, last year his court and Bowers was playing with Minshew and Aiden O'Connell.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Drew Brees is out there throwing him the ball. And he still put up pretty good numbers in, on a bad team.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's an SEC guy, Georgia, so that doesn't help around here. Of course, the hype is already bigger for SEC guys. Yeah. You pass the SEC guy, oh, I saw him do whatever against my Vols, and now look at him here. So, you know, that always plays a role in things.
Well, and to that point, Ian, like, I don't – like, Brock Bowers being this good in the NFL doesn't really surprise me. Like, if you watched him play at Georgia, it's like, yeah, that guy's unbelievable.
They used him a lot of different ways than at Georgia. Out wide, screens, blocking in the red zone. Yeah. They used him a lot of different ways. So it's only fair that you could use him a lot of different ways in the pros. And, you know, tight end is not the position it used to be. You know, it's way more versatile out wide, in the slot, moving around. You saw what Arizona does with Trey McBride.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, what your Packers do with Tucker Kraft. There's your inline blocker, and then there's your kind of your movement guy. I guess the Titans kind of have a miniature version of that with Helm and Chig right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's ways to make a tight end premium pick worth the value.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, we're already talking redraft of 2024, and, you know, I realize it's insanely early for that type of conversation, but, like, the more you look at it, the more amazing it is that Bowers went 13th. It's like, oh, I understand he plays tight end, and tight end is not, you know, it's not quarterback. It's not edge rusher. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily on your premium position list, but when you get a great one, it just can change what you can do on offense, right? Like, you know, I understand that early in his career, Mahomes had Tyreek Hill, so that's obviously a huge deal. But, I mean, he's won without Tyreek Hill, and it's not exclusively because of Travis Kelce, but Travis Kelce's been a huge part of that, right? And it looks like Brock Bowers is going to be that type of guy. Like, that's how good he looks there, and it's just amazing. And look, you know, Latham was taken 7th, Bowers was taken 13th. So it ain't just the Titans, right? Like, you know, the Bears took Rome Odunze, and he's looked good so far this year. Yeah, but, you know, Fashanu went at 11 to the Jets.
He's been whatever.
There's some quarterbacks sprinkled in there. So you got Penix at 8, you got McCarthy at 10, and you got Bo Nix at 12 to Denver.
Yeah.
And I do think taking quarterbacks different, right? Like, you're trying to take a shot on your franchise guy.
Well, it brings kind of a draft philosophy, again, that we always talk about, need versus best player available. Right. You know, like, the Titans kind of felt like they went for need.
Yeah.
Because they needed a tackle. Joe Alt got snagged.
Yep.
And so they just went with Latham.
Exactly.
Whether or not they actually thought he was the 7th best player, you know, it's hard to argue that, or it's hard to believe that he would be the 7th best player in a draft.
I agree.
You know, at that, you know.
And look, I think he might be really good. I do. But, like,
7th best player in a draft.
7th best player?
That means you have to be, like, a top 2 right tackle in the league.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. Or a top 5 right tackle in the league,
what?
At least.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know that enough's being talked about with this. Like,
and so if you go best player available, do you take Bowers, or were they reaching for need?
Right. It's a good question, and that we'll never get, I don't think, an honest answer out of that. But bringing it back to Latham. It's, you know, it's unfortunate we've not seen him this year. Like, he's played for 2.5 quarters or whatever it is. So there's no real way to judge it. But when he's back, and hopefully that's this week, I just think, when you're looking at it, you need him to be great. Like, I'm not you know, being decent isn't good enough. And I said it at the beginning of the season, and I'm going to stick by it now, and I know the injuries can derail things. But one of the takeaways that they need to have at the end of this year is that they feel like Latham is going to be a great player for them for a long time at right tackle. And if you're not feeling that way at the end of the year, if that's still up in the air, to me, that is a tremendous disappointment at the end of the season. We'll take your thoughts on all this. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Andrew Burnett is coming up at 7:30. All that head, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game.
How's it looking for Latham?
Positive. Positive for him. We'll see how the week goes, but so far this week has sort of met the benchmarks necessary to keep pressing forward and hopefully get him some work at practice this week.
That's Brian Callahan yesterday discussing J.C. Latham, who will hopefully be back this week against the Las Vegas Raiders. Robbie Stanley, Ian Safar, Paul Kuharsky here with you on the program. PK, we were just talking about Latham, and I'm dating this back because of the Titans-Raiders game coming up. We'll see what Brock Bowers' status looks like. But you're the Titans. You have a huge need at tackle. You make the decision to draft J.C. Latham at number 7. Brock Bowers goes a few picks later at number 13. To the Raiders, and he has an unbelievable rookie year. And I've said this many times, like, I don't think the Latham part of this is being talked about enough around here. Like, he has to be a great player at right tackle. One of the things you need to walk away from at the end of this season is that he, despite him being drafted to be your franchise left tackle and you switching to right, which already irritates me a little bit, I'm fine with it if you walk away at the end of this season and, you know, a couple years down the road and he is a great player at right tackle. But when you take him at number 7 overall, that's what you need him to be. And then, PK, you couple that with a few picks later at 13, Bowers gets taken at 13, and it looks like he is going to be like a generational tight end. I just think there's a lot of pressure on J.C. Latham to end up being a great, great player for this franchise for a long time. And that needs to happen, needs to start to happen this year. We got PK pulling a Rex Road on mute right now.
Yeah, and it would be nice and tidy if he had a nice game. I mean, we don't know if Bowers is going to play. Like you said, it would be nice and tidy if Latham could come right out of the gate and do good work in this game against Max Crosby. Odds are more likely that, you know, he's a little bit rusty and that we're talking about him, you know, hopefully doing reasonably well, easing back into the lineup. It would be something for them if he came back in, helped the offensive line go even a little bit further than it's gone the last 2 weeks. And you said, well, there's our complete offensive line with our final piece. You know, and it was a neat and tidy storyline, kind of like you're talking about, you know, a guy that we took ahead of Bowers, and Bowers didn't have a great game against us. Because we defended him well, and our guy that we took ahead of Bowers completed our offensive line and played well. You know, there's a little bit of a storybook kind of thing that I think we all consider probably pretty unlikely. But in the end, that's what we need to happen in order for the roster to continue to build in a way that gets them where they hope they're going.
Well, again, I think we're going to follow this for years. I understand the Latham pick. I really do. Like, they could not get anything figured out at tackle, and they needed a tackle. So, like, I get it. I would love to know, PK, and I don't know that we're ever going to get, like, the actual answer on this. I would love to know, when they graded these guys, did they actually have J.C. Latham as a higher grade than Brock Bowers? Or because of how big of a need tackle was and tight end not being a quote-unquote premium position, although I think it's becoming more and more of a premium position, did they just go for what they absolutely needed? Like, I don't think – it was a surprise to no one that they took a tackle heading into that draft. I would love to know at the time what their actual grades were on these players, though.
You wonder, too, you know – and also, this was an odd front office, right? You wonder, and I know if there are people, you know, thinking of somebody specific, but if there are people upstairs there hearing this conversation and probably shudder at the thought. But you wonder if that gets baked into the grade, either intentionally or unintentionally, the need level
right.
of the position compared to it. I wonder if that happens generally speaking, like if high ranking corners and left tackles and edge rushers just get graded higher at the top of the draft,
yeah,
than a position like tight end.
No, I think I definitely think that happens. And look, you know, sometimes
they don't get graded higher, Robbie. They certainly get taken higher.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly like they certainly get taken higher. Like, there's no way that you can, and we know this. Like, there's no way you can convince me that. Despite what these people say when they get up to the podium, I was like, yeah, he was our number one guy left on the board. I mean, there's no way that's the case every time. Like, need factors into this a lot, and particularly when it's a need at a premium spot, right? Like, when it's a tackle, when it's an edge rusher, certainly when it's a quarterback. Like, look, I mean, you could have that case this year. Do we actually believe that the Titans had Cam Ward as their number one rated player on the entire board? Like, do you believe that? Because I don't. Like, but it's quarterback, and I know quarterback's different, right? Like, quarterback is a different thing. But, like, that happens all the time in the NFL.
On their need-adjusted board, he
exactly.
was number one. Yeah.
Exactly. And, look, quarterback, I get it. Like, you know, it's the elevator, right? It's the position that if you figure it out, it takes care of a lot of your things in the franchise. So, I get it. But I just think, like, if you're a Titans fan – you're going to be watching this for a long time. And, you know, you had Penix go after that, McCarthy go after that, Nix go after that, and I think quarterback's different. But, like, the position players other than quarterback taken right before Bowers are Latham at 7, Fashanu at 11 by the Jets, and then Bowers at 13. And you watch Bowers have 112 catches for 1,100 yards his rookie year. And if you're a Titans fan, it's like, well, that could have been us there. I just think – that, along with everything else, there's just so much pressure on J.C. Latham to be great. Like, he has to be like a borderline all-pro player to me when this thing is all said and done.
And I understand that. I'll do the devil's advocate thing. Like, say J.C. Latham ends up a, not an all-pro, but a plus player at that position for the Titans, which they've looked to settle down forever. And Brock Bowers turns out to be what Brock Bowers is going to turn out to be. I mean, if you look at them strictly against each other, absolutely, you're going to want Brock Bowers. But I think there is a world in which you could get a Titans executive to say it was more important for us to get the offensive line settled down after all we went through at that position with a plus player before getting to a luxury like Brock Bowers. And there's going to be a time when we can do that, but it just wasn't then. I even saying it like that, you can hear the tone of my voice,
yes,
right? I'm convincing myself. But I do believe there's a world where people believe and act that way. And if they took Brock Bowers, I think we'd be enjoying watching Brock Bowers, but Cam Ward would be getting hit more.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd be bitching about the offensive line. I'll tell you that.
Well, there is no doubt about that. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Predators head coach Andrew Brunette. It's opening night for the Predators. We'll get his thoughts on a new NHL season that is now upon us. That's coming up next. This Sunday, the NFL game of the week, the Cowboys taking on the Panthers at noon on Sports Talk 830. The NFL game of the week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you. Preds open things up tonight, baby. It is hockey time again here in Tennessee, and to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators head coach Andrew Brunette to the program. Andrew, welcome back. Really appreciate you joining us this morning on the program. How you doing?
Good, Robbie. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, I mean, as you know, Andrew, there's a whole lot of work that goes into this moment, right? I mean, you guys are putting together the roster this offseason. You're making your tweaks. You're making your adjustments. You've gone through camp at this point. So what is today like for you and the coaching staff as you're kind of getting through all this work, and now tonight it's the real thing again and you're back in the swing of things?
Well, I'd say finally, probably exciting day. Obviously it was a longer off season than we're expected. There's a lot of work to do, as we all know. And it was a process. It was a fun process. It was I thought our communication as a staff, as organization, as players really, took another step, which I think is going to be great. And we pieced it together all summer. A lot of get-togethers, a lot of meetings, a lot of talking, and then we finally got the opportunity to put it all in action, starting probably 3 weeks ago, and really thought camp went really well. I thought it was very competitive. The influx of youth brought a lot of energy, a lot of fighting for different positions all the way through the lineup. So a lot of good things. I think we took steps as camp went on. Some of our adjustments felt a little bit more comfortable, and here we go.
So, Andrew, I mean, you're well aware more than anybody of how important Roman Josi is to this team. The POTS diagnosis this offseason. I was out of practice yesterday. He looks great. He's flying around out there. What have you seen from him in camp, and how big a boost is it, with the way last year ended with him being out, to get him back in the fold here as things open up tonight?
Well, one, getting him back kind of means everything. Obviously, he's our best player, and we missed him, and it was a tough year obviously for all of us, but I think for him in particular, trying to figure out what was going on. And he battled through. He tried to give his best foot forward. We really didn't know exactly what's going on. So when I see him this year, the word that comes to mind is free. I think now that he knows, and now that he's diagnosed, now he's taking care of it, now he feels really good, and there's a little freedom in that. And you could see that on the ice. He carries everything so heavy, obviously things would happen, but I think for me, he feels free. And I think the big reason he feels free is he understands what's going on. I think it's a little bit, you carry that extra weight when you're not sure, is it a concussion or is it not a concussion? Is it what's going on? I don't feel great. So now he's got a little bit of freedom that he knows what it is. He feels comfortable with what it is, and he's ready to go. So as a coach, as an organization, to see that is very, very reassuring, because the game's not the same when we don't have Roman with us.
Hi, Andrew. It's Paul Kuharski. Good morning. When did you start thinking Brady Martin had a realistic chance of making the opening night roster, and how did he impress you?
Yeah, coming in, I wasn't sure. I mean, obviously, you don't know. I wasn't scouting the player, so you're trying to, kind of get accustomed and see, get your eyes on him a little bit. Did that through the rookie tournament. Really liked what I saw. And then he came to camp, and it was hard not to like what you saw. And with Brady, he's every step so far, he's exceeded the expectation for a young player. Put him in, and tons of credit to Phil Forsberg. I thought throughout camp, even pre-camp, take him under his wing, show him the ropes, being patient with him, where it's, I've been on the other end of the stick when you play with veteran players, especially decorated veteran players like Phil. A lot of times I don't have time for a young kid, and speaks not just to Phil, but I think for our whole leadership group, I think they've taken that on, and they've understood, that this is the way we're going. And, we got some young players that are going to need help. And if we're going to go to where we want to go, we're going to need them, and we're going to need the best version of them. And they've taken that on, every single one of our veterans. But back to Brady, I just think he went through the exhibition games. I thought he had a really good start, kind of stubbed his toe a little bit in Tampa. And I think, if you look back, I think it was just rest. I was worried about him that game. He played, he played up in Clarksville. He played through camp, played the rookie tournament, played the first two exhibition games. So it was a little bit of a drop-off, and the big test was last Saturday against a really good, pretty much NHL caliber top 10 team in Carolina, maybe top 5 team last year. And I thought he answered the bell, and that line was very effective. So that was the moment for me, like, okay, we got to give him a chance and let's see where it goes. And he's got another great opportunity tonight. And he's, every opportunity that's been given to him, he's flew with flying colors. So I expect him to handle tonight.
What do you like about the line of Jonathan Marchessault, Eric Halla, Michael Bunting, and why did you, what prompted the Junkyard Dogs tag?
Well, I think they've driven us all through camp, and they have that ability to be a little bit of a junkyard dog. They're highly competitive players that got a little grease to them, especially in around the net or on the boards, and they're constantly talking either to each other or to the other team. So it really brings up a lot of the energy and a lot of the identity kind of didn't line most of camp here for us. They've dragged us in the fight, and that's the type of line we're looking for going forward, and hopefully they can keep the little chemistry they have going through camp throughout the season.
So, Andrew, I mean, you guys have talked about this, the 5-on-5 play heading into this year and the improvements that you're looking for there. And I'm not asking you to take us through, you know, the minutia of the adjustments you've made. But generally speaking, when you're looking at 5-on-5 play and trying to improve that heading into this year, what do you need to see? What is kind of the plan of attack in terms of making sure that the 5-on-5 play is where you want it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think you take a hard look at everything, you know, especially at the end of the year when you got, you know, those couple months to decompress and kind of dove down into a lot of the numbers and a lot of the things that I saw with the eye test and some glaring deficiencies, you know, ran forward, things we had to clean up. Part of it to me is mindset, number one. You know, I think you have to be in the right mindset regardless what adjustments. I think every team in the league plays some sort of system that works. And it takes buy-in. It takes that mindset, that commitment that we're gonna play a certain way. So I think for us, there was some things that really stuck out. You know, obviously we did not help Juice enough. So I think in the offseason, Barry added some bigger defensemen that helped clean the porch a little bit. You know, obviously we went through all kind. I don't even know how many defensemen last year. I don't know if it was 12 or whatever the number was. So some little bit of solidarity back there, but also a little bit of buy-in and a commitment to the defensive zone and to the other side of the puck a little bit more. And, you know, a collaboration with a lot of the veteran players, a lot of leadership players of some things that both of us can improve on. But again, the main focus, the main idea is mindset. Are we willing to commit? Or are we willing to buy in? It doesn't matter what system you have. If you don't have that, it's not going to work. And all through camp, I feel with the communication, we've all kind of bought into what we're doing. And tonight, it's going to be a big test to see how that goes.
So, Andrew, I know there's a very limited sample size from Adam Willsby to this point. You know, we didn't see a lot of him last year, and obviously gets hurt at the end of the year. I really liked what I saw from him a year ago. I know you guys have been high on him in camp to this point. So as you watch him and as you've seen him kind of develop over the last couple of years, what sort of a player do you think you've got there in Willsby, and how big a deal is it to have him on your blue line to start this year?
Yeah, I mean, we got a great taste of him last year. I thought he stepped in, and like you said, Robbie, I thought he played outstanding. Unfortunately, he got hurt. You know, he came in the camp, arguably our best defenseman early on. But he's now he's in a position here with Roman. Obviously, but unfortunately, we lost Nick Hague early in camp, and he's risen to the occasion. And it's in a tough spot, and it'll continue to get harder on him. You know, being that number one pairing, night in and night out, playing with Roman, you know the other team's going to get the best out of him every night. So we'll see where he's at. But he's had a really good camp. He does a lot of the things systematically that we really like. We're, you know, not only we add a little bit of size, but I think we're a very mobile defense corps, and he closes gaps, you know, as quick as anybody that I've seen in a long time, you know, dating back to, you know, the old Duncan Keith, John Morrison, Freddie Aduya lines in Chicago, where those defensemen patrolled and controlled the neutral zone. And Adam does that really, really well, and we're looking forward to continue that. This isn't a finished product, and he's going to continue to grow, and he's got a great opportunity to do so. So I think for him, he's excited. For us organizationally, his coaching staff, we're excited what he brings.
Andrew, last thing for you here. Obviously, a huge opportunity for Svechkov heading into this year, and probably got into the league earlier than anticipated last year, but held his own, got through it, and now has a big chance in front of him this year on the team. So how do you feel about where he is heading into the season, and what have you liked about kind of his growth, his evolution as a player as things get going here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the evolution of a young player. I thought he came up last year under difficult circumstances, especially where we're at, and we kind of went through some injuries and we need some help in the middle of the ice. And I thought he came in, played really well, and then he kind of hit he flatlined a little bit and went down, and a lot of, I guess, tribute to his character, he went down the American League and tore it up, you know, and played to the highest abilities. A lot of times you see that with young players, they go down and, you know, they hit a lull in the NHL, and they're, you know, where they kind of flatline, they sort of feel sorry for themselves. They're kind of lost a little bit, and kudos to Svech. He went down and played better when he's down there, deserved another call up. And I thought he had a really good second half of the year for a young player. Obviously there's lots of ups and downs, but I thought he had himself really well. And then in training camp this year, you know, I thought he started off just a little slow, but I thought he got going. I thought he played better every game through camp. I thought his Saturday night game was his best game, and he had a great week of practice. So, again, another young player with a lot of, you know, great opportunity to play with some really good players in a position that to come in as a second or third line center in the NHL. And this, you know, that's exciting for him and put in a great spot. So we're working with him. His faceoffs have gotten better. His whole game's got better. He's going to be a good player. And this is a good opportunity that we're going to need him. Again, back to the veteran leadership, playing with Stammer. I think Stammer's done a really good job with the communication, talking to him, helping him out, trying to get the best version of Svech, because we all know we're going to need it.
Well, Andrew, you're always really kind with your time. We appreciate you taking time to be with us. It's an exciting time of year. We're happy to get it going tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, good luck. Robbie, thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, bye-bye.
Andrew Brunette, our guest here on the program. Preds opening up their season tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Take your thoughts on that, 615-737-1025. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
Son, yes. You just listen to me. Things are going to be fine.
Oh, yeah. You've always colored glasses.
Welcome back to the Fat and Bald Show.
Duval.
I suck. I am the worst ever.
I want an ice cream, and I want a hot dog, and I want Rand Fire, and I want a hamburger.
Like I said, I'm Ron Burgundy. It is that time of the day, the Rob Rant, here on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. PK, I want to take you on a journey today.
Please. I love journeys.
So I live in a quiet part of Middle Tennessee. There's not a whole lot going on out there, which frankly, I love. It's one of my favorite parts about it. Not a whole lot happening. You can just kind of move around where I'm at. You don't really get stuck in traffic all that much. And it's pretty great. I thoroughly enjoy it. So I'm kind of, you know, just casually weaving through my neighborhood the other day and get to a stop sign, and all of a sudden this Jeep comes by and passes, and it's like, okay, well, there's another Jeep right behind. Well, that's odd. That's three Jeeps in a row that I've seen right there together. And the next thing I know, I'm stuck at this stop sign for every bit of 2 minutes. Just 2 minutes where Jeep after Jeep after Jeep is just going. And I can't turn. I'm trying to turn left. They're just going, going, going. You know, they've got the ducks on the dashboard, which apparently is this big Jeep thing where rubber ducks are placed all over the dashboard. And
that's just the Jeep society thing.
Yeah, apparently so.
Weird. I've seen it a lot, but it's still weird.
It's very strange to me. So, like, no lie, at this point, there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 Jeeps that have just passed me and are continuing to follow each other, one after the other, right behind each other. So, of course, the last one passes, and I eventually turn to the left and get behind all these people on a road where the speed limit is 40 miles an hour.
Trouble's coming. You're telling this well.
The trouble is coming. So I look down, you know, we're kind of moseying along, and I'm like, man, that's a whole lot of Jeeps. I wonder what's going on here. And, I'm vaguely familiar with, apparently, these people in Jeeps, they do these get-togethers, and they just drive around and hang out with each other, which is fine. Do your thing. I don't really know where you're going. Like, if you're driving in separate vehicles, kind of defeats the purpose to me. But whatever. I'm sure they end up somewhere and hang out together. Okay, that's great.
It's kind of like the jet ski community. Like,
it kind of is. Yeah, it's interesting the way that all plays out. So we're going, and I'm thinking about that, and all of a sudden I look down at my speedometer, and 18 miles an hour is flashing up on the screen. 18 miles per hour, and we're just weaving and ducking, and, you know, at one point I'm ending up right on the heels of this Jeep going 18 miles an hour, which means I'm going faster than the Jeep is going at that time. And this road, about 3 miles long. When I tell you it took like 6 minutes to get down this road, and that people are just, you can see people leaning their head out the window, looking at stuff. There's nothing out there except like cow pastures and a few barns. And I think they were smoking some tobacco in the barns out there, all these different things. So nice picturesque stuff. People are taking photos. And the whole time, I'm thinking to myself, go! What are you doing? 18 miles an hour is what I'm going down this road. Here's my message to these people. If you want to have your little hangouts and you want to drive together in Jeeps and you want to put your rubber ducks on the dashboard, by God, you knock yourself out. I don't understand it, but people love it. People obviously do it. They got 40 grown adults to get together in the same place and participate in this at least. So I know how difficult that is to pull off, so knock yourself out if that's what you want to do. But I feel like if you're going 20-something miles an hour under the speed limit, I should have the right to challenge all of you to a fight at the same time. Like, I should be able to physically punch you if that's the way that things are going there. 18 miles an hour on the 40-mile-an-hour road is completely and totally unacceptable. If you're going to have this Jeep brigade together, go the speed limit. That's all I ask. You don't have to speed. You don't have to go crazy. But approach the speed limit. My message to Jeep drivers everywhere. This is not your world. Some of us have places to be. Hop out of the way with a little bit more speed to you next time, PK.
It sounds to me like you, it's almost like you interrupted a either a parade or a funeral procession.
And it kind of felt that way.
Clearly wasn't a funeral procession. And, you know, parades are supposed to, you're supposed to have some notice and some distinction. So it clearly wasn't either of those, but they were acting like one. And I too would have been incredibly frustrated. I understand like the communal feeling of, I don't share it, but like I drive an Accord and I see other Accord people and we don't have some communal bond. So it's nice that these people have a communal bond, but they can't disrupt traffic flow for it.
Totally absurd. Speed it up out there in your Jeeps. Now, PK, I would like to give you this opportunity before we get to Charles Robinson to express your thoughts on what I'm sure was an emotional and disappointing night for you as the New York Yankees season comes to an end. How do you feel? What's going to happen with Aaron Boone? What should happen with Aaron Boone? How are we doing today?
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, I annually have these October problems, you know, where I don't feel good about myself when it has nothing to do with me. Look, Blue Jays, better team for sure. But I don't do this thing, and I don't like that this is how we work in American sports, where very quickly after our team loses, we get into kind of season wrap-up mode. Well, it was a good year, all of that. I stay pissed for a few days before I get to that. And so I'm pissed. They should have been the best team in the AL, had home field advantage, which might have flipped things. I don't think it would have. Toronto's better. They play contact baseball, and they don't strike out a lot. And the Yankees still had defensive problems. The things that bite them in the ass, bit them in the ass, and they lost a better team. I just wish that they would be honest with themselves when they get to the point of going forward and deal with some of these things in a real fashion. I really don't think firing Aaron Boone fixes much because he's a middleman that's employing analytics that are commanded to him by upstairs, and it's a Brian Cashman problem. Yeah. And that guy is, like the Pope and, you know, we need a new Pope. That's my theme. But what they're going to say is, you know, they were in the World Series last year and they made the playoffs and went around deep this year, without Garrett Cole, their top starter, and having pieced together a pretty good lineup a year after losing Juan Soto. And that's exactly what they'll say. And we'll all be sick of it.
Yep, I'm interested to see what happens on that front. I do have to get to this text from Tyler Says Paul has a get-together with other Accord people driving 20 miles an hour over the speed limit because we know that's his thing. It's like there.
That would be what we do, 21 miles over the speed limit, by the way.
They are buzzing out here in the Accords.
I have signed up for – yeah, we have a funeral procession. We're in a real hurry to get to the burial so that we can get to the meal.
These people are flying out here. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. Good stuff there, Tyler. We will be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. We'll get into the Titans and all things NFL with him. Looking forward to that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.